From Silicon Valley to Wall Street, the promise and perils of artificial intelligence are playing out on the world stage. But what will the next phase of AI adoption look like? Which companies, from big tech to startups, will dominate? And where do the risks and unintended consequences lie? I'm Emily Chang. Join me at Bloomberg Tech in San Francisco, May 9th, to answer many of the industry's burning questions, alongside Snap's Evan Spiegel, Xbox President Sarah Bond, OpenAI's Brad Lightcap, top researcher Dr. Fei-Fei Li of Stanford, and many more. More details and just a few tickets left at Bloomberg.com/TechSF.
It is clearly now the will of the Parliamentary Conservative Party that there should be a new leader of that party and therefore a new Prime Minister.
Politics in general has taken total leave of its senses.
Changing one man at the top of the Tory party won't make any difference. It won't fix the problems. Let's have a fresh start for Britain. Let's have a real change of government.
You're listening to Bloomberg Westminster, your daily guide to British politics. I'm Ewan Potts.
And I'm Caroline Hepke. Very good afternoon. Coming up on today's programme, as the race for the Tory leadership heats up, we will be speaking to a host of our Bloomberg writers and thinkers, Kitty Donaldson, Philip Aldrich and Lizzie Burden.
Well, just days after Boris Johnson was pushed into resigning, there are now 11 candidates to succeed him as Conservative Party leader. Foreign Secretary Liz Truss is latest to announce her bid, making tax cuts the heart of her campaign.
Well, the former Chancellor Rishi Sunak and his successor Nadeem Zahawi and the ex-health ministers Sajid Javid and Jeremy Hunt are also all running. The Transport Secretary Grant Shapps has also thrown his hat into the ring.
The reduction, which is already planned, 1p off the income tax rate, the basic rate, that should happen now. I also want to freeze, if you like, the proposed increase in corporation tax.
Well, that was Grant Shapps. Other leadership contenders include Trade Secretary Penny Mordaunt, Attorney General Suella Braverman, Tom Tugendhat, the centrist chair of the Commons Foreign Affairs Select Committee, and in a surprise addition late yesterday, backbencher Raymond Christie.
Days into the contest and the claws are already coming out, though, at least according to Nadeem Zahawi, who has dismissed allegations that he is being investigated by HMRC over his tax affairs as a, quote, smear.
I've always declared my taxes. I paid my taxes in the UK. I will answer any questions HMRC has of me, but I will go further. I'm going to make a commitment today that if I am Prime Minister, I think the right thing to do is to publish my accounts annually.
OK, so the current Chancellor of the Exchequer, Nadeem Zahawi, promising to publish his tax returns if he makes it to the final round. Meanwhile, a video has gone viral purporting to show a young Rishi Sunak saying that he has no working class friends. So far, the clip has amassed millions of viewers on Twitter.
Well, the precise timetable for the contest comes late this evening after a meeting of the 1922 committee, which decides the rules. Now, the 1922 could decide to increase the number of MP nominations that each contender must have to stand in order to narrow the crowded field. Here's Environment Secretary George Eustace.
There'll be the parliamentary rounds over the next 2 weeks, so we'll be down to probably just two candidates by the end of next week. And then those two candidates will go out on a series of hustings around the country during August, middle of September, perhaps, we'll have a new leader in place.
Well, Conservatives will be keen to get the contest done as quickly as possible, perhaps whittling down the candidates to the final two before Parliament goes on its summer recess. That is on July the 21st, the end of next week. That means the next 2 weeks in Westminster are likely to get even more heated.
OK, so let's analyse a few of these candidates then with Bloomberg's UK political editor, Kitty Donaldson. Great to have you on. So 11 so far, is that it or do we get more, Kitty?
Oh, no, there could be, half a dozen more if they want to. It seems like everybody and anybody's chucking their hat into the ring just to try and get their name in the spotlight. The major ones, though, we're still waiting on Priti Patel to say whether she's going to launch a bid. She was reported to have had dinner with the ERG. That's the group of right-wing Tories who are very pro-Brexit, if you remember, under Theresa May's government. She had dinner with them last night to take soundings. We're expecting her to say something later today.
Now, Rishi Sunak is the bookmaker's favourite, particularly now that Ben Wallace has dropped out. But just talk us through who the frontrunners are at this stage.
Okay, so I think definitely Rishi Sunak is the one to beat at the moment. The other top players are Nadeem Sahawi, who's the current Chancellor of the Exchequer. He had a slightly wobbly morning in that he said something to Sky News, which then his team had to clarify about government cuts. But, you know, we'll let that one pass for now. Then there's Liz Truss, who is yet to say anything, actually. We're waiting for her to come out and make a case, although she's done a piece in The Telegraph saying she wants tax cuts. But then who doesn't, I suppose? The only one who says he wants sensible approach to taxes is Sunak. The rest of them are all saying they want tax cuts, although how they're going to pay for them is yet to be determined.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to be terribly inventive or terribly broad in terms of the policy platform that anybody's running on. Do you think that gets deeper as the days go by? I mean, so far, it's all really been focused on taxes.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, we were just discussing this morning going, what do they stand for? What do they all think? I think there are dividing lines coming up already. For instance, I was talking to someone who was supporting a candidate last week and said, who said Penny Mordaunt's going to have to answer questions about trans issues. Mordaunt, of course, is a very, very vocal supporter of trans rights, but that's not really where the party is at the moment. Boris Johnson's been saying for the last few years, a woman is a woman, you know, a woman born a woman is a woman. And so that could become a hot potato during the campaign, I suppose.
What does it say about the party that there are so many candidates? Is it a positive that so many people think they've got a chance? Is it just a matter of people sort of positioning so they can get a better job later? Or does it say something about Boris Johnson's leadership that perhaps so many people feel they haven't really been part of the team and they want to stake their claim? Or is it none of those things, perhaps?
That's quite a hard question to answer. I think because he was so obviously the candidate for so long, you know, I remember asking David Cameron about Boris Johnson, you know, and that was years ago. Because he'd been the candidate for so long, then other people have sort of been in his shadow. So, yes, there are lots of people calling out. But also, I think, don't underestimate just how delusional people are. They think perhaps they can get it. You know, my time has come. My time is now. I can be leader.
Okay, because Kitty Donaldson always with a lovely turn of phrase. Let's bring in Philip Aldrich, of course, who is our senior economics reporter. Because, look, joking aside, this is pretty important, isn't it? In terms of the candidates, we've been thinking about, you know, the very, very wide field, the fact that they've really only talked about tax cuts so far. Do you think, what does this group of candidates, I suppose, show about Tory party policies right now? Is the party moving to the right? Do they have to give us more than just tax cuts?
Well, it's quite bizarre when you think about it, because obviously Boris has had to go, but immediately everyone's leapt on the sort of Boris cakeism sort of economic philosophy. It appears it's all
have tax, your cake and eat it.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. It's all tax cuts, you know, forget about tomorrow in terms of worrying about the public finances as far as we can see so far. I mean, obviously there is the cost of living crisis, and so the sort of immediate issue for the public is, you know, how are we going to get through this massive spike in our living costs? And you know, politicians are lining up to say, well, we'll give you income tax cuts and we'll give you more help. So that's been the defining factor so far.
How realistic, Philip, are the prospects of the promises of tax cuts? I mean, it's a little bit tricky, isn't it? It's slightly how long is a piece of string, but it is there much fiscal headroom for giveaways at the moment?
Well, it depends what you set your rules as. I think it's Jeremy Hunt who suggested that he would change one of the fiscal rules from a three-year rolling target of having debt as a share of GDP falling to a five-year target. So this is that classic Augustinian principle of make me chaste but not yet. So in 5 years' time, in the forecast, you've got to have your debt to GDP falling, but the forecast rolls forward every year. So you never actually have to hit this target. And if you've got that kind of a projection, then you can keep spending, and you don't really have much constraint. The real constraint ultimately is, you know, would we face a sovereign debt crisis? Would the bond markets, you know, would there be a bond market strike? And you know, the prospect of that post-Brexit maybe is slightly higher than it was, but it's really, you know, I think if you, you know, Italian debt to GDP levels are 150% of GDP. That's 50% more than the UK. UK is not so bad in the G7. I think we can absorb it in that respect. So, but it's not okay. It's not long-term responsible, is it? It's not the old-fashioned Tory principle.
Okay. But look, is the decision going to be made with head or with heart? Kitty, I think that really is a question for you. Now, is it going to be a woman? Is there going to be an issue of racism within this very crowded field? Who gets picked? What are the other issues in terms of, because this competition really goes to Conservative Party members?
Yes, that's right. And they're a slightly niche bunch, I guess. There was some research in 2018 that showed just that less than 1% of the Tory Party membership are young women. Only 5% are aged 18 to 24. And so therefore you're looking at a bunch of extremely, older men based in the home counties. So that's the electorate that they're appealing to. And that, with that comes, this is why you can see that the tax cuts are the kind of number one priority. But as we go through the campaign, I expect we'll see more kind of, hot red button issues like defence spending and the war in Ukraine and other things that are designed to appeal to classic Tories.
Go on, Kitty.
So as for whether it's going to be a woman, I don't know the answer. Don't forget the Tories already had two women as leaders, so they kind of, it wouldn't be a problem for them to not have a woman. Unlike Labour, who've never had a woman as leader. I think at the moment, with it being Rishi Sunak being the one to beat, if it were to be a woman, it would be Liz Truss. I don't think Stella Braverman's going to get particularly far, or Kemi Badenoch. Neither of them are going to get particularly far in this campaign.
Is quite striking, actually, if you think about, as you say, the demographic of the Tory membership is sort of stale, pale and male. But actually, if you look at the candidates, it's actually quite a diverse group. There's, several women, people from ethnic minorities, quite a lot. So it's quite interesting, that distinction.
The countdown has begun. This May, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg, held in conjunction with our official partners, the Qatar Ministry of Commerce and Industry and Media City Qatar, and premier sponsor QNB. Join heads of state, influential ministers and leading CEOs to make new connections and gain unique insights. Learn more at QatarEconomicForum.com.
Well, let's get more analysis with Bloomberg's EMEA economics and government correspondent Lizzie Burden. Lizzie, thanks so much for hot-footing it into the studio. You'll be down at Westminster today. Now, tax cuts seem to be what many of the candidates are promising. That seems to be the early pledge from many of them. What's the dividing line there? What are the candidates talking about?
Well, so on the one hand, you've got Rishi Sunak, who is saying that the fairy tales need to end. Boris Johnson was too boosterish, and he wants to get real and introduce some fiscal discipline. But on the other side, all the other candidates are saying they're in this arms race, really, for who can cut taxes the most. And the question is, how will they pay for it, and will it be inflationary? And of course, the answer depends on which taxes you're going to cut.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, I note, that the Institute for Fiscal Studies already coming out and warning that the candidates here have to spell out what the cost of this is going to be. You know, they're talking about the dramatic cuts to the welfare state in order to be able to deliver these sorts of tax cuts if they go ahead. Look, where does all of this then leave markets, investors here in the UK? There's been a lot of talk of corporate tax cuts too. So where does this leave business, Lizzie?
I think the very fact that Boris Johnson has resigned, or at least put a date in the diary for his resignation, means that there's a higher chance of a general election coming earlier than January 2025, which was the latest it could happen. And whoever wins is likely to want to capitalise on their political honeymoon. And that opens opens the door up to more pre-election spending. And if Labour wins the election, a load of post-election spending as well. And it'll impact everything from BOE policy to tax to the pound to bonds to stock markets. NatWest's already seeing faster rate rises from the BOE. Depending on who the leader is, it could ease Brexit tensions or it could reduce the risk of Scottish independence. But whoever the leader is, they're likely to get a smaller mandate than Boris Johnson won in 2019. And that means more political stability in the months ahead, perhaps deadlock in the months ahead, which doesn't create the stability markets need.
Now, Lizzie, it seems strange to ask this question, but is this really the end of Johnson's political career? I feel like with any other prime minister, we wouldn't ask this. But clearly, when he made that speech on the steps of Downing Street, he was pretty bitter that he'd been forced out. He saw that he had a big personal mandate from 2019. It was his mandate as he saw it. Is there a chance we've not seen the last of Boris Johnson?
Well, his aides expect that he'll stay as an MP until at least the next election. He also has the chance to hand out some peerages. So Theresa May created 13, David Cameron created 8, though reportedly Boris Johnson hasn't yet sent a list to Buckingham Palace. There's also the question outside of politics of his memoir and his former editor at the Telegraph, Max Hastings, has a great piece about Boris Johnson, the narcissist, on Bloomberg Opinion at the moment. You can catch it on the terminal. And so clearly Boris Johnson's going to try and rewrite history in a way that's favourable to him.
Yeah, I mean, nothing if not scathing, frankly, from Max Hastings, the piece about Boris Johnson. Yeah, look, does the money for the memoir, you know, rival perhaps the US former president? I mean, that was about $8 million, something like that. I can't imagine it would do that. But David Cameron's memoir also raked in a very, very significant sum. Look, where does this leave the Labour Party also? Keir Starmer's been speaking today. He's been talking about how the Conservative leadership contenders have collectively promised tax cuts of £200 billion over the weekend, saying that Britain deserves better than a Tory government. Have a listen.
Only Labour can reboot our economy and end the cost of living crisis. Only Labour can revitalise our public services and re-energise our communities. Only Labour can unite the country and clean up politics.
It's interesting, Lizzie, that Labour's talking about how these promises don't add up, trying to sort of get the mantle of sensible centrist opposition. Where does all this leave the Labour Party?
Well, it is very well for Keir Starmer to say that, but he hasn't yet set out Labour's agenda. He's set to do so in the coming weeks, but he has already ruled out a coalition with the Scottish Nationalists. He's already put out Labour's position on Brexit, which to a degree clears the barnacles off the boat, to use the Linton Crosby phrase, because it's addressing the difficult question of Labour's position on Brexit now. But in terms of the economic strategy, we're yet to hear that from Rachel Reeves. Keir Starmer should be rubbing his hands at this moment, because remember, he's been cleared by the police over those allegations of whether he broke the lockdown rules. But the idea that Labour should call a vote of no confidence at this moment seems extremely difficult to be successful, because the idea that the Tories are going to turn on their own tribe seems almost impossible, even if they have just turned on their leader.
Yeah, absolutely. They seem too busy, too caught up thinking about who they're going to back, because this process could be extremely quick. You know, that they want it to be speedy. Boris Johnson, they're already talking about the last few days or weeks, however long it lasts. The job of government has to be carried on in that period. So he's still there. He's not backing anyone, he says.
Well, maybe no one wants to have Boris Johnson's endorsement at this moment, but there's so much mudslinging happening already. That video came out about Rishi Sunak being somewhat dismissive of the working class, and some have accused Boris Johnson of trying to sabotage Rishi Sunak as revenge for bringing him down. But with all this mud being slung around, it's going to be really difficult for whoever does win to reunite the party.
Bloomberg Westminster. Listen weekdays at noon on DAB Digital Radio in London.
From Silicon Valley to Wall Street, the promise and perils of artificial intelligence are playing out on the world stage.
But what will the next phase of AI adoption look like? Which companies, from big tech to startups, will dominate? And where do the risks and unintended consequences lie? I'm Emily Chang. Join me at Bloomberg Tech in San Francisco, May 9th, to answer many of the industry's burning questions, alongside Snap's Evan Spiegel, Xbox President Sarah Bond, OpenAI's Brad Lightcap, top researcher Dr. Fei-Fei Li of Stanford, and many more. More details and just a few tickets left at Bloomberg.com/TechSF.